Welcome to the Thrive TV Show with Lauren Parsons, helping you boost your health, energy, and productivity.
Kia ora and welcome to the Thrive TV Show. I'm Lauren Parsons, your host, and today I'm joined by Kieran Stroschnitter, all the way from down in Wellington, and we are talking about disrupting leadership with vertical growth. So welcome, Kieran.
Thanks, Lauren.
So nice to have you here. So we're going to talk about a few things. Firstly, what is vertical growth and why it's essential to great leadership? Then we'll talk a bit about why, when leaders underperform, that competency-based programs like delegation and coaching skills are largely a waste of time, money, and energy, and also how you can harness the power of developmental mindfulness to interrupt those fast brain reactivity, which is like that red zone behavior, and be able to really walk your talk as a leader. So before we get into that, though, Kieran, I'd love to just ask you my this and that questions, if that's all right.
Sure.
Fabulous. So tell me, spots or stripes?
Stripes.
Stripes. Okay, nice. Beachfront or mountaintop?
Beachfront.
Okay, nice. Would you rather be able to play 10 musical instruments beautifully or speak 10 languages fluently?
That's an interesting question. I think speak 10 languages.
Yeah, that would be me too. Nice. Chocolate cake or cookies?
Neither. Don't have a sweet tooth.
Ah, okay. Well, let me ask this one then. Salad or cooked veggies?
Salad.
Okay, lovely. Oh, so nice to get to know you a little. So to tell you a little bit more about Kieran, she is the Managing Director of Mindful at Work, bringing mindfulness to workplaces to powerfully transform culture through leadership development. She's a public speaker, co-author of programs for the world's leading workplace wellbeing and leadership app, The Awakened Mind, the NZ partner for the Mindful Leader Vertical Growth Program. She's also an author of Crazy Busy. If busy is the new stupid, then mindful is the new smart. And so that's a book that's for people who are struggling to switch off and want to reconnect with what really matters in life. She's known for her love of shoes and minimalist apartment living, although she's house sitting at the moment. So it's just so lovely. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to connect. So perhaps you can start, Kieran, by just telling us, what is it you love about what you're doing now?
That's a great question, Lauren. I think over the years, I've worked in lots of different areas. So I started my career as a registered nurse, got into nursing education, taught in the tertiary sector for many years, then moved into a leadership role, leading large academic teams of people. I love creating stuff, and I wanted to create a new degree in New Zealand, which we did. And then I wanted to create a degree that was accessible, particularly for Māori in the far north. So we put a blended degree together. Mm. And to do that, I had to lead lots of teams through change, and change that they didn't want to happen. Right. So I talked my CEO into getting me trained as a coach so I could actually coach them through the process, through that change process. And I loved coaching so much, I decided to leave that career once we nailed everything we wanted to nail and to actually start my own coaching business. So I think I did that in around 2006. And then very quickly reached an understanding of how to really change behavior, which was brain-based coaching, and a love of neuroscience, an absolute hunger for neuroscience. So what I saw with that was that if we didn't have a stable, steady mind, then we were just going to keep recreating what we'd always created, and change would be nearly impossible. So ventured into mindfulness and meditation, also went through some pretty big hiccups in my own personal life. So I needed to actually walk my own talk and bring those practices into my own life so that I didn't keep recreating stuff that I didn't want to recreate. And moved to Wellington, working in the corporate area, brought my love of leadership, coaching, everything together, and then met some really amazing people like Dr. Joe Dispenza, and went to train with him in the US as one of his consultants, and then stumbled upon a group of people who were interested in philosophy and mindfulness, et cetera, in Wellington. And we decided to put together a conference in 2018, the New Zealand's first Mindful Leader Conference.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought over a fabulous author and leadership, global leadership expert called Michael Bunting. We became friends, we started working together, we started creating programs together. And so now I find myself being able to bring education, mindfulness, leadership, did I say coaching?
Yeah.
Everything all together with what I do. So it's almost like over the years, I've had all these different careers, which I've really loved. I've loved every one of them. Except actually leading large teams of academic women, not my happy place.
Okay.
No, that was a struggle. But still, the work that I'm doing today is working with individuals, groups of leaders, or one-on-one, bringing all of this stuff together. So, yeah,
right.
I
Wonderful.
Love what I do. And I think if COVID did anything for us, it showed the world that you didn't have to be face-to-face for everything. And that you could, so most of my work with one-on-ones or with teams is done virtually.
Yeah, like this. Yeah, fantastic. It's interesting because I've been using Zoom for many years before all of the pandemic hit, and I used to have to explain some of my programs. Oh, now we're going to see each other. We'll all be tiled on the screen and we'll be able to chat. And anyway, yeah, it's great now. It's just easy. Everyone knows how it works. So wonderful. Now we met, it was an amazing night when we got to meet at Disrupt HR in March this year. And yeah. We both got to give our different talks on different topics. And I really loved, Corinne, what you shared about just vertical leadership and how it's so different to traditional horizontal programs. So can you just tell us a bit more, you know, define what is vertical leadership and why it's important?
Yeah, it's kind of like a complex topic, Lauren, but to actually make it accessible for people, I would put it this way. When leaders underperform, we tend to think that there is a skills deficit. And we send them away on more what we would call horizontal growth courses, like filling them up with new knowledge. It might be a coaching skills course or a strategic planning course or a mentoring or whatever it is. Or actually the one that I find the most often is people want a communication course that will fix their leaders. So we kind of like, if there's a problem, we're going to send them away and we're going to just pour in more stuff. And that's like adding new programs to your current already struggling computer operating system. It's like just fill them up with more stuff. Because under pressure, what we find is that it doesn't matter how much new knowledge you've got, you'll revert to old behaviors, particularly under pressure.
Yeah.
Or when you're unaware of assumptions, beliefs, old behaviors, et cetera, that are ruling you, you will just revert back. So it doesn't really matter what you've learned. It's that old saying, you know, wherever you go, there you are. So vertical growth is about understanding, okay, how do we get leaders to grow in a way so that they can actually use all the new skills and stuff that they've acquired? Because when leaders underperform, it's really due to a skills gap. It's their, you know, it's their subconscious programming and conditioned responses that keeps a leader change resistant. So vertical growth is, instead of just piling new programs into that computer operating system, it's akin to actually changing your operating system altogether.
Yes, and I can so relate to this because I literally am working on a brand new computer with a new operating system. Everything's been updated and my computer previously was limping along and I'd often be at 100% of CPU usage and so everything would freeze up. So I can absolutely relate to that. I'm sure so many other listeners can as well, that as you say, and I've done it myself, you know, where there's been a communication problem, oh, let's send them on a communication course or let's do this training. I deliver those sorts of trainings myself. So I really love the idea of actually increasing people's capacity. And I know that, you know, you talk about mindfulness as being a real key to this. Now, what would you say to the people, and I'm not one of them, because I'm absolutely on board and get this with you, but what do you say to the people that say, well, mindfulness, you know, in the workplace or in leadership, how is this important? Surely that's a bit woo-woo. How can that really make a difference? Answer that for me.
Yeah, great question. I think most people have been sold a dud with mindfulness. Most people believe that mindfulness is purely a relaxation, stress relief exercise. Yes. And it's great for that. Don't get me wrong, it's great. It's wonderful. But the real juice with mindfulness is actually awareness. Aware of our inner experience, our thoughts and our emotions, being able to consciously be present to what's really going on, get a little bit of objectivity and watch what's going on in our inner experience. Because if you can do that, you're not going to be yanked around by that inner experience. If you can see it, then you've got a completely different perspective on life. So developmental mindfulness is about developing present moment awareness, but making the unconscious conscious, making all that stuff that's going on that we just take for granted and we're probably completely unaware of. According to the neuroscientists, we're unaware of about 95% of what's actually going on in our inner experience. So once you expose that, it gives you so much freedom. You can watch yourself and you go, oh, I'm doing that thing I do again. Oh, I'm having that thought again. That's interesting. Or, oh, I'm experiencing a bit of anxiety or fear or frustration here. That's interesting. What's going on? And that gives you that pause, that moment to choose how you're going to respond. If you don't have that, it's kind of like life 101. If you don't have that, you're just going to be yanked around by what's going on in your head and your heart and without awareness. It's not to say that there's anything wrong with our inner experience. It's just that we need to for real adulting, for real leadership, we actually need awareness. We need conscious awareness. And that is first and foremost with mindfulness is how do we build that? How do we get that? Because most people just say, oh, yeah, I'm going to be mindful. It's like, oh, yeah, good luck with that. It's like, no, if you want to be physically fit, you know you've got to give your body a job to do. You've got to do something with it to be physically fit. And it doesn't happen overnight. Same with mindfulness. You've got to give your mind a job to do, which is a practice, whether that be meditation or informal practices, it doesn't matter. But you need to build your awareness so that you've actually got more choice over how you respond to life.
Yeah. So to put this in a context, so for example, if you have a leader who's not got that awareness, I guess it makes me think of, you know, that question of why do we do the things that we do and why do we have self-sabotage come up? Let's say we have this goal. We say that we want this relationship to be better. We say we want to help that person develop. And yet for whatever reason, we decide not to go and see that person. And it's really interesting what you mentioned about so much of what's going on internally that we're not aware of it. You know, we may not even be aware of our own biases or why we're doing this rather than that. So I guess what is the key to overcoming that and to heightening our awareness? Are there any, you know, practical strategies or tactics that you'd give to people that are listening in right now?
Yeah. I'd say it's a really big question, Lauren.
Yeah, it's probably the whole thing.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of how I might answer it. So I'll go back, if I may, to that question that I said I'd like to pose to you. So you can probably think of a leader that you've worked with. Who inspires you, who you'd willingly follow. You know, like what kind of qualities did that leader display?
Yes. So Kareen emailed me this the other day, and the first thing that popped into my head, happy to name him, because it's Steve Barry. So hi Steve, if you're listening. And he was my very first manager when I graduated from my undergraduate and postgraduate degree and got into my first leadership role. And Kieran, I had no idea what I was doing. You know, I'd done all this governance and all of this sort of high level study, but I felt like I didn't have the practical skills of how to recruit staff, how to train staff, how to run a meeting. And so I would sort of just hide at my desk because I didn't really know how to actually lead and motivate a team. And at the same time, I had this amazing boss, Steve Barry, who he was quite hard and direct, but I really respected him. And he challenged me to realize that I needed to learn how to get my team to actually respect me, because I was going around trying to please everyone and trying to get everyone to like me and causing chaos with the rosters and various things, because I was just kind of bending over backwards for my team. And there was lots of challenges, but he was really great at actually coming alongside and mentoring. He invested in us with a huge amount of fantastic training and development, and he was always honest, and he always, I think, hoped the best for me and hoped the best for us as a leadership team. And he also set a great example himself every day, getting out on the gym floor and training. So when I was there feeling overworked and overwhelmed, he would say, Lauren, look at the example that I'm setting. You know, you just got to make it happen. Just go out there and fit it into your day. The work will keep piling up, but you just make that a priority. You've got to make you a priority. So perhaps a long answer, but just, yeah, so many different things that he taught me, and the person that he was and the example that he set, and the, I think, the encouragement that he gave was amazing.
Yeah. It sounds like there was a lot of trust in that relationship, and it sounds like he was honest and inspiring, competent. There's, I mean, role modeling of that kind of leadership is great. I mean, there's all different ways that we role model great leadership, but we know consistently from global studies on leadership by Kozes and Posner. This is a long-term study of about 250,000 people that's been done every, I'm just reading it here, done six times every 5 years, and they asked people, you know, what qualities do you want in a leader such that you would voluntarily follow them, not because you have to, but because you want to? And what people said was the four qualities that consistently came out, and this is globally, were honest, competent, inspiring, and forward-looking. But honesty always rated around 84%. And about 20% higher than those. And honesty was the most consistent one, because we want to trust our leaders. So who we are as leaders, walking our talk, working with integrity and honesty, et cetera, is really vitally important. But when we work with leaders and we ask them, what is the talk that you're trying to walk? About 99% of leaders can't tell you.
Right.
They just can't tell you what is the walk. And what we know is that if you can't communicate what is your talk that you're walking and role model it, trust drops incredibly. Trust and engagement drops incredibly with people. So, I mean, coming back to vertical growth,
yeah,
and linking that together, if you really want to grow as a leader, what we would suggest is work on treating people with respect. Treating people with respect, honesty and respect.
And it sounds so simple, but I think it's not always easy to do, perhaps, isn't it? One other thing that comes to mind, can I ask you, I know when you did your Disrupt HR talk, you gave two examples of two different leaders and the sorts of behaviour patterns that they had had and then how that changed. And I feel like people might really relate to that. So can you just share a bit about that?
Yes, sure. So remember I said before, it's all about awareness. So I used two examples of Amit and Alice. So Amit was a people pleaser. And he feared being honesty was one of his values, really important to him, and yet he wasn't honest with people because he actually feared that if he was honest that it would break down relationships. And he couldn't hold people accountable, just couldn't hold people accountable because of that. And Alice was a micromanager. Excellence was an important value of Alice's, but she was a micromanager. And people just didn't want to work with Alice. Both Amit and Alice had these, you know, when they dug a little bit deeper into what was actually driving their behaviors, it was really clear for Amit that it was wanting to be liked and admired. Mm-hmm. And with Alice, the interesting thing was with Alice was that she honestly believed that if she didn't micromanage people, that they wouldn't meet their targets, that she actually had to do that. Mm. But a hidden fear, which often comes out with vertical growth work, is that we also fear success.
Mm.
So she felt if she was successful and people, and she stopped micromanaging and the team still met their targets, perhaps she'd be seen as unnecessary.
Wow.
Irrelevant.
Mm. And I think what's so interesting is that often these are fears that we don't even realize that we have, that it takes a bit of peeling back the layers to realize, oh, this is actually what's driving. And you can just imagine that, oh, if she changed that belief and then was able to let go of that and change the behavior and allow her team to just do their own work, that then they're going to flourish and thrive. And hey, she's going to look great as the manager and as the leader. Mm.
Yeah, well, the end of that story was that her team did flourish. They did actually meet their targets. In fact, they did better than ever, and she was actually promoted. Yeah. But it's really about, when it all boils down to it, it's distress intolerance, is that we something happens and we feel a discomfort. For Amit, he felt really anxious about people not liking him if he was honest and held them accountable. Mm. With Alice, there was a fear with inside of her that she would be seen as irrelevant and unnecessary. You know, so when that started to bubble up, what we usually do without mindfulness is we distract ourselves, we numb. We just try and get rid of that difficult emotion as quickly as possible. So Alice would micromanage to get rid of that fear that the team wouldn't meet their targets, so I'll micromanage them more. Mm-hmm. And, you know, similar kind of stuff with Amit. If we can't sit with that discomfort that's within us, and let's face it, most of us have been socialized and told you shouldn't have uncomfortable emotions, you should get rid of them as quickly as possible, or numb them. I mean, we're really great at numbing our uncomfortable emotions today with alcohol, vaping, comfort eating, you know, minus shoe shopping, you know, whatever it is that if we don't actually adult, if we can't actually stay with that discomfort and actually get some perspective and go, oh, I'm doing that thing I do again.
Mm-hmm.
Can I respond differently in this moment? What have I told myself will happen if I hold people accountable or if I'm honest? What have I told myself will happen if I don't micromanage? You know, if we can't actually expose all of that stuff, we're never going to change behavior. We are never, ever going to change behavior. And we've all worked with leaders whose behaviors have been what we call that reactive red zone behavior.
Yes.
And until we see it and get some perspective, and this is a long process, this doesn't happen overnight, to actually see, get perspective, and be able to respond differently and change our behavior more towards a values-aligned behavior, who we really want to be in the long term, we will definitely choose those short-term fixes.
Right.
Because they feel good in the moment. Mm-hmm. They feel good.
Yeah.
But long-term, they're not creating what we want to create. We're not going to be the leader we really want to be.
Absolutely.
Aspire to.
I sometimes talk to this when I start working with a coaching client, which I only have a very few at the moment. But I have the odd, you know, senior leader that I'm working with. And it's really interesting because I often introduce and explain, you know, kind of the ground rules and how it's going to work and that they can share anything they want. And I talk about the fact that, you know, we can start looking at the challenges and we can look at some practical strategies, but they may just be surface level and you may find that they work for a time. But what will make the biggest difference is if we can go deeper into what is driving that behavior. And it's all about having awareness of what are perhaps the beliefs that we have about ourselves, about where we fit in the world, about how life works, that will constantly drive our behavior without us even being aware of it. And when we can get down and get into that and realize, oh, maybe I'm believing some things that just aren't true, like there's not enough out there, or I need to have everyone like me, or whatever the thing is, when we can start to challenge those beliefs, it's just amazing, isn't it? When we actually see that significant long-term shift. And I love what you said about that, oh, I'm doing that thing that I do, because I'm sure we all have, and probably always will have, I'm sure that I will always have things that I do that I need to, you know, get back on top of. Oh, I'm getting fearful about this. So yeah, maybe I am micromanaging this situation. So interesting, but it just shows that power. And I often say, you know, if you want to really create lasting change, we're going to go deep. It might be more challenging, but you will get so much more value out of that rather than just the strategies. And yes, we might talk about some strategies as well, and perhaps you can do both together. So interesting. Now, there's a term that you used, and I wanted to ask you to kind of define a little for us. You talked about harnessing the power of developmental mindfulness. So what is that?
Developmental mindfulness, really simply, is present moment awareness of your experience. And being able to interrupt what I would call, what we call fast brain reactivity, and actually choose to align our behaviors to being the best partner, parent, person, leader that we want to be. I mean, without presence, without awareness, we're going to continue just to be yanked back into old behaviors, particularly if we are living within what we call socialized mind, and that's in wanting to be liked and admired, wanting to fit in. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with wanting to be liked and admired and wanting to be fitting in with other people. But really, if we want to experience true happiness, peace, joy within ourselves, we need to be aligned with what's important to us and to our own values. And if we're always worried about what other people think and looking good, I've seen this so often in businesses. I mean, I've experienced it myself so often. I've done it myself so often. But to actually really be living from a place where we're congruent with what we think, say, and do is congruent with what we aspire to be, the very best version of ourselves, that gives you a wonderful sense of peace and calm and clarity. And I was just thinking back to many years ago, I worked for a brilliant CEO. I loved him. Very quiet, unassuming man. And we used to have senior, they were program manager meetings, actually. And I used to get very annoyed in these meetings that the minute taker would not take down what I was saying, because if I had a point to be made, I wanted it made and I wanted it minuted. But people were so scared that what I said would concern senior leadership team, particularly the CE, that they wouldn't minute what was important to me. And I got so frustrated by this. So how I got around this, I just think it's really funny. Like, they were all in socialized mind. Oh, we can't say that. We can't write that. Oh, you know, goodness, we can't do that. So I would get out of that meeting and I would go straight over to my CE's door and I would knock on it and I would sit down. And I'd say, right, I need to talk to you about this because this is really important. It's not going to come back to you via the proper channels of that meeting, but we need to actually have this conversation out. And it was because I completely trusted him. I knew that he trusted me and I could actually say the things that need to be said. But so often in meetings, people are just covering their asses and looking good and stealing other people's ideas and, you know, not making waves and going along with the crowd. It's like, that's not the leadership that we need today. Yeah. We need the people who will speak up, who aren't scared to look foolish, aren't scared to make mistakes, but actually are more aligned to really what is important here. So sorry, that was a bit of a long spiel.
Yeah, no, it's great. And I mean, it's just screams to me of the importance of psychological safety, which is I don't know if you know, is one of the key things that I talk about. And yeah, it's just so important. And you talked about the word trust before, you know, psychological safety is really just a fancy word for creating that high trust environment where people can feel free to speak their mind. So if I come along and I say, hey, I think we should do X, Y, Z, that you can say, hey, Lauren, have you thought about ABC? And we can have this really productive conflict. You know, Patrick Lencioni's got his fantastic model 5 dysfunctions of a team, which the base of that is trust. And so, you know, if we're in the absence of trust, we have an absence of conflict, which is a bad thing, you know, because we've got a little bit what you're talking about, just the superficial harmony where everyone, you know, they pretend to go along with it or they don't even minute what was perhaps discussed. We actually need to have that safe environment, don't we, where leaders can speak their mind, where actually team members can speak their mind to each other and to their leaders. So that then we have better discussions, that what I call positive, productive conflict. And then we actually are committed to what we're doing. Even if you decide not to do X, Y, Z that I suggested, I'll be more on board with ABC because we've talked it through and I can see your point of view. And you know, and then with Patrick Lencioni's model, then we obviously have accountability and we get better results. So, so important. And I think, again, everything that you're talking about in terms of personal awareness and mindfulness in the moment leads into building that trust and that psychological safety. Fantastic.
Yeah. I guess I would say, you know, developmental mindfulness is about adulting. It's about being aware of what has a tendency to yank you about and rising above it. And that can sound, it can sound very much like with the work I do with the mindful leader, that that's just an ethics-based nice to have thing. Oh no, it's all about psychological safety. And one of the clear through lines that I do with leaders and teams is whatever that leader is working on in themselves, because you leave a leader to their own devices, they'll choose something they're already good at. Because this stuff can feel, make you a bit vulnerable. So you have to really choose something that is going to make a huge difference, not only to you as a leader. You've got to be able to explain how working on that behavior in yourself will powerfully, positively impact your team and business outcomes. There has to be a clear through line. We're not just doing this for nice stuff. You know what I mean? It has to be a clear through line. I want to say something else about that. What was it? I've lost it. Yes, I know.
It'll come. I knew it would come.
It will come. The moment I let go, it comes. Is the leaders that I work with the Mindful Leader Vertical Growth Program, they don't just get to choose what they're working on. Their teams help them choose what they're working on.
Yeah, I wonder if that's where you were going. That's so powerful.
Oh, yeah.
The team.
Yeah.
It would really help us as a team if you as a leader can get better at this or can, absolutely.
Yeah. And this is really meaty and it's challenging, you know, to sit down with your group or have your group do a 360 that pulls out things you're fabulous at, but things you need to work on. That in itself is challenging. But as people go through the Mindful Leader Vertical Growth Program, we have a device called a 360 check-in where the leader chooses a number of people from the business, the team, whatever, their direct reports or whatever, to give them feedback on what they're working on every week, every fortnight as they go through the program so that they're getting continuous feedback. And that leader, when we do group work together and we go through the program, every leader has to come and they have to give an example of when they've actually achieved what they've been working on, when they've been overcome by fear and distress and tolerance and they've backtracked and what they're learning. But they also have to show other people in the team their 360 check-in, their feedback from their teams with how they're rating, how they're doing. So it's a lovely accountability mechanism and very powerful. And, of course, you'll always get people who don't. You know, there'll be the odd person who won't change anything, who's not prepared to look at their own stuff. You will always get that person, but they are rare in my experience. Mm-hmm. Given the opportunity to grow, I think we all want to be the best versions of ourselves. Yeah. And we all know that we will go backwards and forwards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Beautifully said. Beautiful. Oh, Kieran, it's been so lovely chatting to you today. If people wanted to find out more about you or connect with you, what's the best way to do that?
I think the best way is LinkedIn. I've got a really odd name, so it's pretty easy to find me, Kieran Strotten. I'm on Insta and Facebook, but I don't really do anything there. If you go to my website, mindfulatwork.co.nz, I do now have a sign-up form that I send out a regular newsletter. And, you know, as we said, Lauren, I like to use life experiences and share little stories on LinkedIn. I like writing. That's probably why. So AI is coming for me. I like writing. And also, I didn't mention this, but I am a professional speaker. In fact, probably the thing that I enjoy most in the work that I do is speaking at conferences and events, because I really want to get through to people that mindfulness is not a relaxation, stress reduction, just that. It's actually about being the best versions of ourselves, and living into our potential.
Nice. And if there's one final thing, and perhaps that was it, but maybe you have something to add, if there's one final thing you want to share with our listeners, what would that be today?
I would say we're all a work in progress, you know. I always say to people, we're going for progress, not perfection. There is no such thing as perfection. And the other thing that I always say to people, because with the work that I do, I never want it to come across like I'm this perfect person and I've got my life all sorted. Absolutely not. Like the rest of us, I'm a work in progress. So I like to use my own vulnerabilities, my own ridiculousness, as I call it, to expose my own fast brain behaviors. I mean, as fast brain behaviors go, I'm a recovering avoider of conflict. Right. So I have had to learn how to have those difficult conversations. I've had to learn how to put boundaries in place. It isn't easy. And given the right triggers, I will still regress back into avoiding, going in, withdrawing, going away. So it's a lifelong process. And I would just say that if you're interested in mindfulness and interested in meditation or whatever, get support. These practices are wonderful, but they are not easy.
Nice. Wonderful. Progress, not perfection. Thank you so much for all your time and for joining me on the show today, Kieran. It's been lovely getting to know you and hearing more about your stories.
Thanks, Lauren. It's been lovely talking to you as well. We could talk for hours, I'm sure of it.
We can. Thank you to everyone that's been listening in. That's another episode of the Thrive TV Show. Go out and thrive.
Thank you for listening to the Thrive TV Show with Lauren Parsons. Visit thrivetvshow.com to access the show notes and discover our fantastic bonus content. And be sure to subscribe so you don't miss the next inspiring episode.